Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks as well to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. So, what are we doing to try to get on top of this housing problem we have throughout the region? Well, the Council of Governments is spearheading an effort that has been underway, and today we're going to get an update on that project. Elizabeth Morgan is with us from the COG. Then we have two representatives of a company known as Community Scale. We have with us Sarah Brent McCoy, and we have Jeff Sauzer. They are the experts. They are the people who can come up with all the solutions. And in a matter of just clicking our fingers, we're going to have it. Right. So, Elizabeth, we're going to start with you. If you grab that microphone over there, tell everybody a little bit about you, please.
Yeah, thanks, Manning. So, I'm Elizabeth Morgan, a community development planner with the Catawba Regional Council of Governments. And the Catawba COG, if you're not familiar, we work with four different counties in our region, York, Chester, Lancaster, and Union counties. I've been with the COG a couple years, and I was with the city of Rock Hill before that. So it's good to see you, Manny.
Good to see you as well. All right, let's pass it on over to Sarah, if we can. Sarah Brent McCoy, tell us about you.
Sure. Hi. Thanks for having us. I am an associate at Community Scale, an urban planning consulting firm. I'll let Jeff introduce us a little bit more, but I work with our analysts and geographers and economists on data visualization and analysis and mapping for our firm. I'm based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, originally from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
How does somebody from Baton Rouge, Louisiana move up to Massachusetts? Tell me.
School in Vermont and then a job. stuck around.
Okay, well, you'll probably be coming back to South at some point. All right. Jeffrey, you're up, buddy. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. My name is Jeff Sauzer, principal at Community Scale. We're a planning firm based in Massachusetts, but we work all over the country. We really specialize in regional housing policy analysis and studies like this. So we're really excited to be here continuing this project. We're excited to share with you what we've learned so far, what we've heard from people. I'm also from the South originally, from Atlanta myself. So we brought our Southern contingent.
Whoa. Something's wrong here. Usually, I just had an item on the news here this week. 70% of the population that is moving right down here to what they call the boom belt. 11 southeastern states, including Oklahoma, I don't know how they got the southeast, but that are in this wonderful mecca. True. And you're going the other way.
That's true.
I'm worried about what you're going to be telling us here today. So tell me, Elizabeth, how did this all come about that we hooked up with Community Scale?
Yeah, absolutely. So we had noticed, talking to a lot of our different stakeholders, communities that we work with at the COG over the last year or 2 years now, that the category of housing, and specifically workforce housing and housing related to economic development, was a topic that kept coming up in different meetings, both within our region, our four-county region, and across the state, and then even a broader southeastern region. And we kept hearing from our stakeholders, and you know, we would get together in groups and just kind of kick around different thoughts and ideas, and it came to our attention that it might be time to do a study and really find out what we know and what we don't know. Because everybody had some preconceived notions or things that they thought were happening just anecdotally, or, you know, just looking in your region, you can kind of get a feel. But having real data to be able to look at this issue, to know what we have, and then how do we get to solutions that might be good for our different regions. And, you know, and for the COG, for our region, our four counties, our counties are very different. They have a lot in common, but there's also, you know, different industries in each of the counties. There's different economic drivers in each of the counties. And so we felt like it was time to do a study, and we got stakeholders together from all four counties in the region, both public and private, And just said, like, is this something you're interested in? Is this, you know, something you would like the COG to help facilitate? And overwhelmingly, the answer was yes. That group said, yes, we would love to be able to put together, you know, all of our efforts and be able to do a study that's really going to help us get the information we need to go forward. And so that's where this study came out of. So that group then put together, you know, a rubric and RFP for what they wanted to get out of the study to make sure it really met everyone's needs. And part of that became, this is a regional study, but it's also a local study. So we're looking at the region, but more specifically at the county levels and then, you know, municipal levels. Because we know that different things are going to work for different areas. What's going to work in, you know, a Rock Hill might not be the same thing that's going to work in a Jonesville. So we wanted to be able to make sure that all of our constituents were able to get what they need out of this. So that RFP went out. We had a lot of different responses from firms all over the country. And that the stakeholders worked to kind of narrow those down, did interviews with several of the different consultants, and ultimately Community Scale just had the most experience and was able to provide what the group really wanted. And so
the COG went out and found the funding to make all this work?
Yeah, so that was one of the other things we looked at with these groups. You know, we said if this is something you're interested in, there's got to be funding to help support it, and there was. So these groups all absolutely funded it. Each county supported, municipalities, and then there's also some private money that went in as well to go into the study. So, yeah.
All right. So, Jeff, you've been out and about, started your work how long ago?
We started at the end of last year, and we're maybe two-thirds of the way through the process.
Yeah.
And tell me what you've been doing. You just been scouring the landscape and trying to figure out what the heck is what?
To some extent. So I think we began with some initial data analysis, and then we were out here in January for a first visit to do a first round of stakeholder engagement. Because for us, for work like this, it's really important that you both look at the data. This is a data-driven study, but also connect that to what we're hearing from the stakeholders on the ground. As Elizabeth mentioned, the situation is quite different from county to county, so we want to pick up on that nuance. So after that round of focus groups, we went back and analyzed our notes from those meetings and also did additional data analysis, and now we're back with some draft findings. They're not complete yet, and what we've been doing is meeting with some of those same stakeholders in each county, visiting each one today and tomorrow, to run those preliminary findings by the stakeholders, see if we got the story right, hone the story as needed to make sure that it's resonating with everyone, and then also talk about some policy and strategy recommendations that might be useful to some of these communities. What we want to do is be able to equip people both with a data perspective and also some ideas about what to do about it.
Are you finding common threads between all four of the counties?
I think in general, regionally, there are some common themes. So there's a general consensus that you know, economic development is important, that workforce is a major part of that. There's some demographic trends that we're seeing across the communities. So that we have an aging population, for example. And there's a lot of changes in the housing market that are manifesting in different ways. And so I think there's more interest in getting our arms around what that means for the housing market. You know, what do we need to do about anticipating some of these trends as they impact, especially the availability of workforce? Can the employers in our region attract and retain talent like they used to be able to? Where are the gaps? Where are the shortcomings? And how can we try to fill those gaps through policy and investment?
Okay, so you said that you've got some draft findings. I'm really intrigued. Give me one that's going to register.
Yeah, we were warned you might try to ask questions like that.
Sorry.
I don't want to give too much away because I do want to. So we are speaking with stakeholders to really hone in on the more specific recommendations. But I think, I mean, some of the findings would not be surprising to people. The housing market is increasingly competitive, increasingly expensive. People are having a harder time finding what they're looking for. There's a real diversity in what different segments of the workforce need and want. So people might, there's smaller households out there that might need a smaller home, or there's people that are looking for a certain type of lifestyle, a certain type of environment, access to amenities, to restaurants, to walkability. So breaking down the workforce in terms of what their different preferences are, and then comparing that to what's available out there, not just what exists, but what's really coming to market. What are the price points? Is that meeting the needs of these people, and where is that falling short? So I think the report will really detail that analysis so people can identify within their community where the gaps might be, where the needs are greatest, and how to address those.
So there's always been a lot of discussion that in the world we live right now, with everything being as expensive as we have, we've got to come up with a new model of house, you know, a smaller house that would be more affordable, that could be built in nice planned neighborhoods that had streets and all that kind of stuff. Yet, to do that, you're up against all these regulations that these various governmental entities have that keep you from doing that. Is that one of your things that you're going to bring up in your study?
We're certainly looking at the regulatory environment. So zoning, for example, is an important consideration. You know, we can identify housing types that might be needed or underserved. You know, to what degree does the local zoning regulation enable that? Are there modifications that could be made there? Another challenge is we have less land than we used to. It costs more to build. So where are there opportunities to build new? In other cases, we might be talking about infill development, where there are underutilized sites, where you can add some housing types that are not presently available. So I think it's a variety of approaches that needs to be tailored to what makes each community different as well.
I'm sorry.
I think that's one of the great things about this study is that it really is a data-driven study. And we want the different localities to be able to take this information and come up with what works for them. So there are, you know, like Jeff said, recommendations, but it's more of a, you know, here's the information. How can you make that work for you and what you need in your community? And so in some ways, it could almost be like a phase one of this is the data. And then the phase two, if the locality wanted to pursue that, would be a deeper dive into solutions and recommendations.
So it seems to me, on the outside looking in and knowing nothing about this, that the data is probably the most important part of this, because you can use that if you want to go knocking on doors in Washington, D.C. or down there in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, here's what we got. It's called a problem, and we need your resources to help us overcome this problem, because the lumber ain't going to get any cheaper. The land ain't going to get any cheaper. The labor to build the houses is not going to be any cheaper. You know, it's got to come from someplace else.
Right, yes, and that data is definitely a good first step to start building, you know, your platform or your ideas to solutions, whether that's funding or policy, you know, wherever they come from. But yes, I think without the data, you know, it's not hard to make a case, but it's harder. Like, you know, having the facts definitely leads you in a direction of better solutions.
So we've got common themes. Have we got any unique themes? Like, you're in all these different counties. Has something popped up that you had no idea was going to pop up, that you know is going to have to be something that's going to be tackled?
I think in our experience, we work in a lot of regions that have this full spectrum from urban to suburban to rural environments. So we were ready to anticipate generally what some of those patterns might be. But I think here, specifically, for one thing, there's a significant difference between the places that have seen a lot of development and might be seeing higher and higher prices, and then areas that have not seen so much development, some of the more rural communities. And so I think from just a policy perspective, they might have a different set of priorities. And then also from a market perspective, you know, new housing development looks different in Chester County to York County to Union County to Lancaster County. So you need to kind of, maybe coming back to the data perspective too, the level of resources available varies from place to place, but I think universally we have less resources to work with than we used to in the private sector with the government. So you need to make much more focused and strategic choices with how you deploy those resources, whether it be staffing, regulation, subsidy, whatever it might be. So a lot of times we find that having data to back up those policy decisions give people more conviction and believing that this is the right thing to do, and then also allows you to measure the impact that it has so you can be accountable for the results. It has to be really, I think, strategically tailored and backed up with data.
I have a brother who lives in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. He's lived there for 50 years. He tells me now, today, the billionaires are pushing out the millionaires, right? Now, granted, 95% of their property is federal property, protected, all that kind of stuff. It's gotten to become such a big problem that workers that come into Jackson Hole are traveling 60 miles to come in. So they've got some ordinances in place that, if I understand this right, where those who are going to build new business enterprises have got to show a housing plan to go with it, because you can't keep having people come 60 miles away to work. I mean, that's probably the extreme, but I mean, Yeah. That's the kind of thing that can happen.
And it's 100 miles when the one bridge goes out and they have to take the detour around the mountain instead of
across
the
mountain. Yeah, that's exactly right.
We're working in several communities in Vermont that see a similar phenomenon where the housing prices are so extreme that the workforce has to commute 50 miles, or in New York State, they're commuting, you know, an hour. I think we're not at that point here in South Carolina, which is a good thing. But we have heard stories of people commuting quite a distance across the region from further parts of North Carolina. When we talked to employers in the region, we heard a lot of stories about, you know, just the risk of employee turnover and the acceleration of employee turnover, because you just can't keep that up for too long. So people will they'll endure a long commute for a while until they find another opportunity closer to their home. That job is now open. That employer now has to refill that job. They lose a lot of efficiency. There's a lot of waste. So I think we're not at the breaking point. Some of those communities like Jackson Hole might be, but we don't want to get to the breaking point either, which is why this is a good time to talk about this.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We as a community, we spend an awful lot of time talking about quality of life. And we got a lot of it here. We got the mountains, we got the oceans, we got all this recreation around here. It's a wonderful place to live. But when you're trying to attract, you know, new business and new commerce, they're looking at all these things. But they're also going to be looking at, where are my people going to live? Now, that's fine. They can go down there and walk, and they can go swim, and they can go to Carowinds and ride the rides and all that kind of stuff. But if we don't have some place for them to live that's reasonable, then we're not going to be able to attract them. But this is not unique to this region. It's like everywhere. So I'm wondering, where's the grand solution to all this?
Yeah. One thing we heard from employers is that, you know, they make more and more considered decisions about where they're going to invest, where they're going to expand, where they're going to add their next facility. Some of the things they look at are environmental, or, you know, it might be about taxes. But one of the top items on the list is the availability of housing for their workforce. And so we've heard of situations where, you know, places might pass over a whole state, a whole metro area, because housing is just out of reach. They can't see a path to filling the jobs that they want to create there. So I think that's something we heard already from some of the employers. Another component of the quality of life question is, you know, we're looking at workforce across the board. So in the knowledge sector, for example, a tech worker, a finance worker, these people, they might not be so impacted by price, but they want to live a certain quality of life. They want to live in a certain type of unit, a certain type of place. And so how can the region attract more of those folks? And often the employers are locating in the same communities that their employees want to live. So creating an inviting community for an employer is one and the same with creating an inviting community for employees. What those workers are looking for is a high quality of life, you know, the ability to walk to downtown Rock Hill, to get to a restaurant, to get to a festival. I mean, you've got a lot going on here that's very attractive to these people. So I think there's a lot to build from. But that's increasingly how a region like this needs to compete for some of those knowledge worker employees and their employers.
You know, I'm sitting here and imagining that I was on an elected body. Can you imagine that? That would scare the yell out of anybody. But I was, you know, I think a serious question that an elected official would have to ask himself would be, before I, you know, invest another $5 or $10 million in another wonderful amenity, maybe I need to take that $5 or $10 million and put it towards housing. I mean, that's a shocking concept, I know, but I mean, realistically, if you want everybody to be, you know, you want as many people as possible who are working to have a roof over their head and not fall into a situation where they're commuting 50 or 60 miles, you're going to have to do something radical like that. Am I way off base?
No, not necessarily. I think one of the perspectives, because there's so much less capital available to governments and to developers, is to make a strategic investment that can help the private sector kind of pick up the slack. So sometimes making an investment in a quality of place to make that place more attractive for residents makes it a better investment opportunity for developers. So you can, in that way, indirectly catalyze some housing development. You don't have to put it all directly into the project as a subsidy.
Or maybe take a look at those rules and regulations that would allow for different types of housing to fit the world that we live in today.
Certainly.
Okay, we got to take our mid-program break, which is why we exist here today, to tell everybody what we're doing. It's Straight Talk, of course, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax Here with Founders, and by Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. More online at andersongriggs.com. Our thanks to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care, and you can find out more about them online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Okay, we have the Rednecks cue card in front of us. This tells everybody in Massachusetts why they need to be down here in South Carolina to enjoy these fresh subs and salads at Substation 2. At the count of three, we're going to tell everybody. Are we ready, audience? Are we? One, two, three.
Slice. Garden.
Not bad. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
Substation 2 is excellent. It's fresh. The buns just feel like they came out of the oven, and you can't beat the deli meat.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Start your journey with a new auto loan. Get on the road with an auto loan from Founders Federal Credit Union. From city streets to off-road trails, your journey begins here. Our competitive rates can get you on the road in a ride that fits your lifestyle and budget, with no payments for up to 90 days. You can apply for a pre-approved spending limit valid for 30 days before you start shopping. Visit one of our many convenient office locations or go to foundersfcu.com/auto to apply for an auto loan today. Membership qualification required. See webpage for details.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Why do you take investment advice from a mutual fund or insurance salesman when you can work directly with a genuine money manager? If you have $100,000 or more, call the professionals at Anderson Griggs Investments and see the difference for yourself. 324-5044 or go online to AndersonGriggs.com.
There are lots of reasons why people like dining at Substation 2.
I like the lunch special pricing.
I like the bread, good prices, and location.
Man, it's just utterly delicious.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Jerry Road across from Winthrop, surrounded by people who are trying to figure out solutions to the workforce housing issues that we got throughout this this whole entire area. Really, it's across the whole country, but they're focused in on what's going on here in our four-county region. Elizabeth Morgan, of course, is with the COG, the Council on Governments. And we have from a community scale, which are the experts digesting all this information, we have with us Jeff Sauzer and Sarah Brent McCoy, who has been noticeably quiet. So she is going to grab the microphone right now. That's it. Don't worry. It doesn't hurt, I promise you. Tell me, with all this that you're gathering, You're trying to assimilate all this so it makes some sense to those that you're going back to say, here are our preliminary findings. Is that right?
That's right. I think our main deliverable is the data and the synthesis of the data, and a bunch of charts and maps to represent it. But we're breaking all that data down for how many subgeographies?
10 different subgeographies.
10 different subgeographies, including counties and cities and other parts, sort of portions of the county. So we'll be giving a bunch of different communities something to respond to locally, in addition to sort of the broader reports.
So when you do this, and I don't know, this may be a question over here for the COG. Sarah, I mean, would it be, Elizabeth, when we're talking about a follow-up? In other words, once they got all this information, what are you going to do with it?
Yes. So once we've got the information, it will be packaged as a study. There'll be, a regional kind of overview and then specific to the different areas. And that'll be delivered to each of the counties and the municipalities that participate. There'll be a presentation for each county, and we're working to schedule those sometime this summer. So those, kind of explaining the data, picking out points that, we really want to highlight. And then there'll also be some online deliverables that will be updated in real time and interactive. And I will let Jeff and Sarah Brent tell you more about those, because that is over my head, but they are very cool.
Okay, they're very cool. That's your cue, Jeff. Go ahead.
I think as Sarah Brent and Elizabeth have said, a critical part of this process is gathering, organizing, and communicating a wealth of data in a way that is understandable to people and also actionable. Helps people make better policy decisions, have a better, more constructive dialogue about these issues too. So we're building a dashboard online that will tie much of the data that's embedded in the reports into an interactive format that can be parsed and viewed by county, by sub-geography, so by larger city, early municipality, so that people can see the way these numbers, these trends hit the ground in their communities. There's also an interactive mapping component to that as well, because a lot of this is a spatial conversation as much as it's a numbers conversation. And we find the more of this data we can get out there, accessible to people, I mean, that's the next question. As we conclude our work, how do we move forward with this information? You know, having ready access to this data is what the policymakers are going to need to continue to work with it. Importantly, also, the dashboards tie into a database we've built that refreshes with the latest data available over time. One of the challenges with housing studies lately, as things change faster and faster and faster, is the data is out of date by the time you're done. I mean, we're updating housing reports that were finished in 2023 and 2024 because people think it's too old already. So to be able to equip the COG and stakeholders with something that's always got the latest census data, always has fresh market data, helps people feel confident that they're working with the latest information and not yesterday's information when they're making policy decisions for tomorrow.
So other communities that you've worked with, you're doing this for them.
Correct.
To follow up. Okay. I mean, can you tell me, give me an example of somebody you've worked with, I don't know, years ago, that actually took this information, and by God, they've done something with it, and something's happening.
Sure.
You got a story like that?
I think so. Well, one dodge, because one of the I think, patterns we've seen when we work for regional clients like this is a lot of times there hasn't been a conversation about this issue yet at the regional scale. So the first step is, how do we even think about this regionally? We're so accustomed to thinking about it at the municipal level, at the local level, but starting to appreciate that this is a regional phenomenon, these are regional forces. So I think the first step is just establishing a vocabulary for even talking about it, giving a regional organization like the COG a platform and a data set to refer to that they can use to foster that conversation, to convene the dialogue. We also see one of the values of a process like this is a lot of times the participants, the stakeholders, the municipalities can start to compare notes because now they're part of a regional conversation. And so they can start borrowing from each other to take best practices from one place and adapt it to their local community. So I think one productive outcome is just a more collaborative region that is seeing things in alignment with each other.
All right. We've got all this information. We have all this data. We know what the problem is. I'm just asking, it's going to be up to those who hired you to do this, to take the data and make something happen with it. That's the bottom line. So whose job is it to kick them in the butt? Is that the Council of Governments?
We are here to serve our different communities, and so
you're being so gracious.
We are providing them with opportunities and information, and you know that's really our role, is to be here to assist and to get groups together and get these conversations going, and then be here to assist and you know, really be able to form those different groups together, have those conversations, and be a place where that can happen and people can come together.
Well, the one thing you don't want to do is talk it to death. Somebody's got to take the first step and do something.
Correct. And I think, you know, this was something that we didn't come up with as a COG, saying that this was something that these communities needed to do. This is really something they came to us and said, this is something we're interested in and we need more information. And so I think this is really being driven by the localities. So I think there is that willingness there to really see this data and figure out what the next steps are.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you very much. Sarah, thank you very much. Jeff, thank you very much. And we look forward to getting you back here when you reappear again sometime this summer. And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax Your Founders, and by Anderson Riggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill, common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors, online at AndersonGriggs.com. All right, are we ready? One more time. If we can get that gentleman right there. Hey, listen, sir, would you turn around? We need your advice on here. What do we do here at Substation 2 at the count of three? One, two, three.
Slice.
He is good, is he not? Have a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.